Chapter 78. He was lying in one corner of the vault, eyes closed and sunken in, skin as blackened as old tar paper on a warehouse roof. The muscle tissue was shrunken over the bony skeleton, and a bacterial growth covered him from head to toe. He looked like a moldy piece of bread. Only the white hair of his head and beard were perfectly preserved. A pool of viscous fluid extended around the remains and moistened the atmosphere, as if a bucket of water had been thrown on the walls of the vault. "Whoever it is still wet," Kemper murmured, his face a mask of horror. "How can that be after so long?" "Water accounts for over half the weight of the body," Pitt answered quietly. "There simply wasn't enough air trapped inside the vault to evaporate all of the fluids." Donner turned away, repulsed by the macabre scene. "Who was he?" he managed, fighting the urge to vomit. Pitt looked at the mummy impassively. "I think we will find that his name was Joshua Hayes Brewster." "Brewster?" Seagram whispered, his frightened eyes wild with fear. "Why not?" Pitt said. "Who else knew the contents of the vault?" Admiral Kemper shook his head in stunned wonderment. "Can you imagine," he said reverently, "what it must have been like dying in that black hole while the ship was sinking into the depths of the sea?" "I don't care to dwell on it," Donner said. "I'll probably have nightmares every night for the next month as it is."
"It's positively ghastly," Sandecker said with difficulty.
He studied the saddened, knowing expression on Pitt's face.
"You knew about this?"
Pitt nodded. "I was forewarned by Commodore Bigelow." Sandecker fixed him with a speculative look, but he let it drop at that and turned to one of the shipyard workers.
"Call the coroner's office and tell him to come and get that thing out of here. Then clear the area and keep it cleared until I give you an order to the contrary."
The shipyard people needed no further urging. They disappeared from the cargo hold as if by magic. Seagram grabbed Lusky's arm with an intensity that made the mineralogist start.
"Okay, Herb. It's your show now."
Hesitantly, Lusky entered the cavity, stepped over the mummy, and pried open one of the ore boxes. Then he set up his equipment and began analyzing the contents. After what seemed forever to the men pacing the deck outside the vault, he looked up, his eyes reflecting a dazed disbelief.
"This stuff is worthless."
Seagram moved in closer.
"Say again."
"It's worthless. There isn't even a minute trace of byzanium."
"Try another box,"
Seagram gasped feverishly. Lusky nodded and went to work. But it was the same story on the next ore box, and the next, until the contents of all 10 were strewn everywhere. Lusky looked as if he was suffering a seizure.
"Junk. Pure junk," he stammered.
"Nothing but common gravel, the kind you'd find under any roadbed."
The hushed note of bewilderment in Lusky's voice faded away, and the quiet in the Titanic's cargo hold became heavy and deep. Pitt stared downward, stared dumbly. Every eye was held by the rubble and the broken boxes, while numbed minds fought to grasp the appalling reality. The horrible, undeniable truth that everything, the salvage, the exhausting labor, the astronomical drain of money, the deaths of Monk and Woodson, had all been for nothing. The Byzanium was not on the Titanic, nor had it ever been. They were the victims of a monstrously cruel joke that had been played out 76 years before. It was Seagram who finally broke the silence. In the final ignition of madness, he grinned to himself in the gray light, the grin mushrooming into a banshee-like laughter that echoed in the steel hold. He thrust himself through the door of the vault, snatched up a rock, and struck Lusky on the side of the head, sending a spray of red over the yellow wood ore boxes. He was still laughing, locked in the throes of black hysteria, when he fell upon the putrescent remains of Joshua Hayes Brewster and began bashing the mummified head against the vault wall until it loosened from the neck and came off in his hands. As he held the ugly, abhorrent thing before him, Seagram's conflicted mind suddenly saw the blackened, parchment-like lips spread into a hideous grin. His breakdown was complete. The parallel depression of Joshua Hayes Brewster had reached out through the mists of time and bequeathed Seagram a ghostly inheritance that hurled the physicist into the yawning jaws of a madness from which he was never to escape.